ओम ज्ञानच निरंधस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः.
This is the most essential part of knowledge spoken by Krishna. Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita to give knowledge. It is a book of knowledge. There are different kinds of books. Some are written for entertainment. But most important books are books that are written for knowledge. There are so many different books of knowledge. Knowledge of how to work computers. Knowledge of how to fight in various ways. General knowledge, scientific knowledge. But the most important knowledge, what is the most important knowledge to us as living beings? What would be the most important knowledge that we could get? So different people would answer this in different ways. Some people would say, well, the most important knowledge would be how I can become a billionaire. And someone else would say, well, the most important knowledge I would get is how to have a very healthy body. So why would you want to be a millionaire? The idea is a billionaire. The idea is I'm not a billionaire now. I'd be more happy if I had a billion euros. Now I only have 2.5 euros. So if I had a billion more, I'd be more happy. Or some may think if I had a big, strong, healthy body, then I'd be more happy, because now I have a weak, unhealthy body, so I can't enjoy life properly and I'm not very attractive. So if I had a very strong and healthy body, then I'd be able to enjoy life better. So the basic idea is, if we're thinking what would be the best kind of knowledge, we're thinking that what I'm lacking now, I would gain by getting that knowledge. Now I'm suffering because I only have 2.5 euros or I only have a very weak and unhealthy body. But if I got the knowledge of how to get a strong and healthy body, or the knowledge how to get $1 billion, or if I got the knowledge how to become a computer programming expert, then I could get a great job. So we want to get knowledge that will fill up our deficiencies, and we think I have such a deficiency because of lack of knowledge that if that was filled up, then my life would be better. But here Krishna is addressing the sum total of all our deficiencies, which we're probably not even aware of, that what is the real thing that I'm lacking. Even if you get $1 billion, then we'll want another billion. Or we'll find that still we have so many problems. Or even if I have a healthy body, however healthy it is, it has to die sooner or later. So what is that knowledge that can solve all our problems? To understand this, we'll have to find what is the root cause of all our problems. Mostly people operate on a very superficial level. How I can get more money, how I can get a healthy body. Even religious people, mostly their approach to religion is very superficial. They go to God asking for the same thing. God, give me $1 billion, or at least enough to pay my bills. Or God, give me good health. So we can say that is pious. At least people are approaching God. But it's not really understanding God or who He is. In fact, most of the religious processes going on in the world, they ignore the most essential point, which is suggested here by Krishna, is that we should love God for His own sake. Mostly people approach God like this, that give me this, give me that. And they think that by following some religious process, then eventually when they die, they'll go to God and God will arrange for them to enjoy life in heaven. And in heaven they'll get... Actually, it's not a very clear idea given in different religious scriptures. There was one ex-Archbishop of Canterbury, which means the head of all the Anglicans, the biggest Protestant denomination in the world. So he was pretty old. You have to be pretty old to become an Archbishop of Canterbury, because it's you have to go up and up and up. And when you're almost ready to die, they make you the Archbishop of Canterbury. So he was asked that, well, what do you want to do when you go to heaven? They presumed he was going to heaven because he's the Archbishop of Canterbury, although we have our doubts. But anyway, he said that, well, for the first 100 years I'll praise God. And then for the rest of time I'll enjoy myself.
Oh.
Because they think that God, he should just make an arrangement so I can enjoy myself. That's God's duty. But Krishna consciousness is a different, completely different approach to religion. The approach is that how we should dedicate ourselves for the enjoyment of God, simply for His pleasure, without any personal desire. And you may think, well, what's that? Then what's the use of that? If you're here, we're working for so many different people. We work for the boss in the office or whatever. We work to maintain our families. And then if we have to, again, we go to heaven and we have to work for God, well, what's the point? Go to heaven means we should just enjoy ourselves. I mean, here we find that one of the leading religionists in the world has got this idea. So what to speak of ordinary people? But this concept that we should worship God so that God can help us to enjoy better, this very concept is the root cause of all our problems. We think that we should be the center. I should be the center. I should be the enjoyer. But we don't understand that God is the enjoyer. He is the enjoyer of everything. He is a person. In most religious systems, we don't even want to accept that God is a person. Because if we think that He's a person, then that means He's a greater person than me. And then my position of enjoyment is compromised by God. Then we see God as a competitor for our enjoyment. So this idea of relegating God to a non-person, He's some force or power. You can pray to Him, although Him is not really proper because it's some kind of impersonal it. So you can pray to God, but He's not really a person. It seems rather strange how you can pray to God, but He's not a person. He creates everything. If you pray to Him, you expect Him to fulfill your desires. These are all things that people do. People create things. People, you ask them for something and they can give it. But then we want to relegate God to a non-person. This is due to, as Prabhupada used to say, a poor fund of knowledge. Because we think that, well, I'm a person, so how can God be a person? That means God's the same as me. This is trying to apply material logic where it is not applicable. I am a person and I am a rascal. So if we think God, and every other person I've seen in this world is also a rascal. So if God is a person, He must also be a rascal. This is poor logic. Or I am a person and I am limited. So if God is a person, He must also be limited. This is again poor logic. That God by nature is unlimited. So if He's unlimited, then He should also be able to be a person. Because if we say He's not a person, if we say He's a person, that's putting a limit on Him. But also saying He's not a person, that also puts a limit on Him. By saying He can't be a person, then He's not unlimited. So God is a person, but not a person as we think. Person in the sense that He has form, qualities, activities, likes and dislikes. He eats. And we think that's very strange. Why does God have to eat? He doesn't have to eat in the same way that we have to. If we don't eat, then we lose energy. God is the source of all energy. But he eats not as a function to maintain his body, but to accept the love of his devotees, that they provide food for him. Not that he needs it, but he accepts it because it's offered with love. So here the idea is to love God. And love means you have to love a person. You can't love a non-person. You can't love something. Something. You cannot love something. You can love a person. You can say, well, I love my car. But it's not in the same way that I love my wife. It means, when you say I love my car, it means I'm very attached to my car. But we can't have exchanges with a non-person, like a car, in the same way we can have exchanges with our wives and friends and children. Personal exchanges. So if we say that God is not a person, then that means he's in one way less than us, because we are people. So this point, actually most of the religious systems of the world, they try to deny that God is a person. The most essential point. Because religion means ultimately to love God. And love means as a person, and there is exchange. Now we may think, well, how is this possible? Because God is so great and he is so small. How can there be an exchange between me and him? But we're already praying to him, that's already an exchange. If at all we accept there's God and then we're praying to him, then that's an exchange. So he's very great and we're very small, but that's another symptom of his greatness, his kindness. God's greatness is not just his creating and destroying and being very powerful, but his kindness. How great is his kindness? And his kindness is not simply in giving us money and curing our backaches. There's a lot more to the kindness of God than that. And the kindness of God is not simply that he arranges we can go to heaven and then we can enjoy ourselves there. Yes, we will enjoy in the spiritual world with God, but what is the nature of that enjoyment? If we think that the nature of enjoyment in the spiritual world is something like enjoyment as we imagine in here, I will go to heaven and then there will be all kinds of facility. I live in a palace and there'll be all kinds of nice food and all kinds of servants for me. Then again, we're trying to make ourselves the center, make ourselves the enjoyer. And then what about the servants? And what are they doing? Then they're not enjoying because they're subordinate to me. But rather, our enjoyment in the spiritual world means that we enjoy with Krishna, with God. We have a personal relationship with him. And that is the source of our enjoyment. Not that we have physical comforts. Not that we don't have to go to work and pay bills. That, of course, in the spiritual world, there's no going to work and paying bills. But there is enjoyment, but not trying to make myself the enjoyer, but living with Krishna, who himself is the supreme person, the supreme enjoyer, supreme blissful person. And he is such a wonderful person that to be with him, and simple things, running with him, playing with him, dancing with him, eating with him, all these things, because he is the most wonderful, sweet and kind person, then this exchange of love with him, that is his greatest gift to us. God's greatest gift to us is not curing our backache or giving a solution to our financial problems, but how we can live in a relationship of pure love with him, that he doesn't just give us some minor benediction, but he gives himself to us. The devotee is expected to give himself to God, and in return he gives himself to us, and there's no greater gift than that. But the devotee doesn't want to, oh, now I have got God in my control, therefore I will use it to control others. Not like that. The whole mentality that I will exploit and enjoy this material world, that is diseased consciousness. And if we bring this consciousness to religion, that I will pray to God and I will engage God in my plans to exploit and enjoy the universe, then actually that's a very perverse kind of religion. Rather, religion should be that if at all I want to petition God for any benediction in this world, it should be that how I can ask God how He can help me to become His instrument in preaching His glories. So this concept of religion, often people find Krishna consciousness very difficult to understand, because as long as we are attached to the idea that God cannot be, or must not, or should not be a person, and that God's duty is to arrange enjoyment for me, then we can't actually understand God. Therefore, you see, we have all this interfaith, and we can go to different religious preachers and discuss this and that, but actually, as long as we have the idea that God is there for our enjoyment, then there's no real understanding of religion. It's very superficial. So here, Krishna is recommending the process by which we can be freed from all difficulties by giving ourselves to Him. All our difficulties are caused because we are thinking how I can enjoy myself separately from Krishna, instead of thinking how I can serve Krishna. So even if we ask God, give me $1 billion, and even if we get it from Him, that won't solve our problem, because the very root of our problem is that we want to enjoy separately from Krishna. So even if we get $1 billion, and then we're going on with the same mentality, how I can enjoy separately from Krishna. Therefore, we find even billionaires and even people with healthy, strong bodies and all the things that we might desire, that we might think would give us happiness, we find that people, even they have these things, they're not at all happy. We don't find that they're happy. We might think that they're happy because they have, we think they should be happy because they're living in big houses and they have big cars and so many things. But they're not happy. It's just like if you go to a relatively poor country and you tell people that, well, people in the West, actually, they're not very happy. They're all miserable. And they think, well, how can they be miserable? You see, they have plenty of money and cars and houses and all these things. And they must be happy because, you see, I'm living in this poverty-stricken situation. And definitely, if I had lots of money, I'd be more happy. It's a very simplistic way of thinking. But we find that generally, just like in India, if we tell the average person that people in America are not happy, they just don't believe you. They can't believe how it cannot be true. Because people, they've got lots of money. And you see on the TV, all the movies, that they look as if they're happy. So why shouldn't they be happy? But the fact is that these things don't, they in and of themselves, they don't bring happiness. So what Krishna is offering, that we always think of Krishna and become His devotee, that is actually in our real self-interest. We think our self-interest is how to get money and all the things that money can do for us or can buy for us. But this doesn't solve our problem. We're still, and even if we get all kinds of facilities, Janmaishvarya Shruta Shri, these are the four kinds of basic opulences. Birth in a high family or a prominent nation, having lots of money, being very intelligent and educated, and having physical beauty and strength. So these are four basic kinds of or facilities that people desire. But even if we get them, then they don't last. Nothing in this world lasts. We have to die. So if we think that, well, I'll lead a religious life and worship God, and then I'll go to God, and then I'll enjoy these things in the kingdom of God. But actually, if we have such a mentality, then we cannot actually understand God. If we have the mentality that God, He will provide for me to enjoy, then we can't understand Him, because our constitutional position as spiritual souls is that we are meant to act for the enjoyment of Krishna, who is the supreme enjoyer. And if we do that, then we enjoy with Him. But if we think I should become a separate enjoyer, then we can't understand. That knowledge of Krishna is blocked by the wrong attitude. Knowledge of God doesn't come from, even from studying scriptures. Even if we study scriptures, if we have the wrong attitude, then Krishna will not bless us with the proper understanding. That's why we see many people, they know all the verses, not many people, but many people, they know at least some verses from Bhagavad Gita, but they don't understand what is the actual message, which is to become His devotee, even though Krishna states it very clearly here, that we should become His devotees. There are even people who can quote these verses, but they don't enter into the spirit of it, because they have the attitude that I should be the enjoyer, instead of accepting that Krishna is the enjoyer. Ultimately, we accept that God is great, but really to accept Him as great is to accept that fully means to accept our subordinate position to Him. And we have no position. We have no position to be any enjoyer separately from Krishna. We have real devotion to God means not to desire anything for ourselves. And then people might say, well, what's the point of worshipping God if you don't desire anything for yourselves? Because they think that the very purpose to worship God is to get something from Him. But Krishna teaches something completely different. Don't think what you will get from me. Don't worry, I'm looking after you. You don't demand this, 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 that, that, that. Anyway, I'm going to look after you. So why come? Give us this day our daily bread. Do you think I'm not going to feed you? You're so lacking in faith that you have to pray for bread? So better not to ask God for bread. Better not to ask Him for anything. Better to pray to Him that simply make me your servant. Do with me as you wish me to do. What do you want me to do? Instead of going to God and asking that here's what I want you to do for me. Better go to Him and ask, what do you want me to do for you? Then again the question may come, what can we do for God? Because He's all powerful. He's all powerful, but He likes, because He's a person, He likes that we will act in a manner that is pleasing to Him. He can do everything by His own potency. But He becomes pleased when He sees that His devotees are acting out of love for Him. Just like a father, he provides everything for the child, but if the child, as an expression of appreciation for the father, sees some nice flower in the garden and picks that and brings it to the father, oh, here's a nice flower. So the father himself is maintaining the garden, but the child has brought, this is a nice flower, I want you to enjoy this, it's something very nice. You please enjoy. Then the father appreciates, oh, how nice my child is. So Krishna says the same thing. Patrang pushpang valantayam yome bhakta prayachati tadahang bhakti upaharitam ashnami prayatatmana. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, fruit, flower or water, which are all my creations, but if you offer it with love, I will accept it. So Krishna consciousness, it's very simple, it simply means to love Krishna. And why worship Him? Simply because He is lovable. Because He is so sweet, so kind, so lovable, then we should offer our love to Him. That is our actual necessity of our heart, is to love. But in this material world, love means everyone is trying to get something from someone else. Just like we find, for instance, to give an example, we find that young men fall in love with young women. and vice versa. Now, we don't find that a young man falls in love with an old woman. Because he say, I'll fall in love with this young woman because there's something enjoyable to be had from the young woman. Not from the old woman, there's nothing enjoyable to be had. And we find that young men, or even any men, tend to fall in love with young women with very beautiful, attractive bodily features. And they say, I'm falling, you're such a wonderful person, but actually they're attracted to the body. It's not, they say, I love you for what you are, but they think, actually they're attracted to the body. So love in this material world, or you'll find that if a man is very rich, then he'll have so many friends. And then when he loses his money, he loses his friends. So the friends, it's a well-known thing. So the friends, they didn't like him because he was a person or what. They were just attached to his money, that's all. So in this material world, love means to become attached to someone for what we can get from them. But love of Krishna means that anyway Krishna will give us all that we need. But we're simply attached to him because of his wonderful transcendental qualities. Yes, he's all beautiful. But we are attracted to his beauty, not that I will enjoy or I will exploit. Actually, Krishna consciousness is such a high understanding. That Krishna, he's a person, so he also has his female consorts. He's the supreme enjoyer person. It's very difficult for people to understand, because in this material world, we think that the attraction between male and female, that's something material, but that's a reflection of the original attraction that Krishna has for Radharani and his queens and the gopis. So he's enjoying and they're enjoying with him, but that enjoyment, that is ananda chinmaya rasa, that is totally spiritual enjoyment. There's no trace of personal sense gratification in that. So a devotee is attracted by the beauty of Krishna, but he doesn't think, let me enjoy the beauty of Krishna, I will enjoy. But rather he thinks Krishna is so beautiful, and Krishna's gopis and queens, they are so beautiful. So they are enjoying ananda chinmaya rasa, spiritual enjoyment. Let me become a servant of them and assist in their enjoyment. So it's a very high concept for us who are in the consciousness of, let me enjoy in this material world. So actually Krishna doesn't discuss here in Bhagavad Gita all these intimate details of his personal life, but he gives the basic understanding that we should give up our mentality of thinking how I can enjoy my body, how I can enjoy this material world, and understand I am not the body, I am an eternal spirit soul. This body will die, but I will continue to live, and I will get body after body after body suffering in this material world unless and until I understand that I am a spiritual being and I am meant to serve this supreme eternal spiritual being, the supreme eternal spiritual person who is Krishna. So this is in our best interest. This is the highest knowledge by which we can get free from all problems, simply by understanding that I am meant to serve Krishna. This knowledge is being given by Krishna. So this knowledge, this is good for everybody. This knowledge is the best knowledge for everybody, because everybody, every living being is part and parcel of Krishna. And every living being can attain the highest perfection. Every living being is meant for this, to simply become absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, how to serve Krishna. So this Krishna conscious movement is meant for giving this knowledge that we are meant to serve Krishna. And not just theoretical knowledge, but practical is giving practical guidance in how to serve Krishna. Mm-hmm. Just like Krishna says that patrang pushpang phalang, whatever you can offer these things to me, I will accept. So devotees of Krishna, they're offering food, flowers, song, dance, all these things to Krishna. Everything should be offered to Krishna. Whatever ability we have, we're getting from Krishna. Whatever possessions we may have, we're getting from Krishna. So in gratitude and with joy, we should offer that to Krishna. And Krishna will be very pleased by that. But if we think that I shall enjoy this without offering to Krishna, then Krishna, that means denying Krishna. Just I will enjoy. Then we become like thieves, not recognizing that actually this is all the possession of Krishna. So to live a life without Krishna consciousness means to lead a sinful life. And to live life in Krishna consciousness means to live a pure life, everything offered to Krishna without any desire for personal enjoyment. But by living in that consciousness, that pure Krishna consciousness, we become eligible to enter the spiritual world where Krishna is eternally enjoying by singing and dancing and eating without any indigestion. There's no bad quality in the spiritual world. All the things that we think enjoyable here are going on there. But there, everything is conducted in a spirit of loving service to Krishna. So there is no bad effect like in this material world. There's no bad effect. You dance and you dance. If you dance, of course, mostly people only dance here when they're intoxicated. So then they get some headache the next morning, and they're dancing, or maybe a professional dancer, professional sportsman, and then when you get older, you get all this rheumatism and arthritis. But there's no such thing. There's no old age in the spiritual world. Everyone is eternally young, living with Krishna, who is the supreme eternal youth, serving him very happily. That happiness is not broken by any unhappiness, as it is in this material world. We get a little happiness, but again that turns to unhappiness. But in the spiritual world, there's unmitigated, everlasting happiness, because that is the true happiness of the soul, which is the happiness of living with Krishna, being with Krishna, and serving him in loving exchange. So Krishna is recommending for our benefit, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me and bow down to me. In this way, you will surely come to me. Krishna says, I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. Hare Krishna. Is there any question about this? Yeah.
You mentioned that people have relationships in the material world on the basis of wealth, physical attraction. So, we also are product of, we're also part of the material world, but we're trying to preach Krishna consciousness. So what should be the motivation in developing certain relationships with certain people?
What should be our motivation for developing relationships? A devotee develops relationships with others in this world on the basis of Krishna consciousness. There's no use to developing any material relationship. There's no use to walking out on the street and slapping someone on the back and saying, hey, let's go for a beer. That's a material relationship. You can slap them on the back and say, hey, take this book. So the slapping on the back, that may be the same. But the motivation is how to be Krishna conscious. That's the difference. The center is Krishna. So even that's there, family life in Krishna consciousness, means the main aim is to come together, husband and wife, and satisfy Krishna. So you could say, well, that's material, but it can be spiritualized. Everything in this material world can be spiritualized. Almost, not everything. Butcher's shop, they have to stop killing the animals. then even that you can convert to a Krishna conscious storefront. Although generally we don't recommend to take up such places, but mostly devotees always seem to get all kinds of funny buildings, often ghostly haunted buildings, because no one else wants to take it. So, but anything we can, just like sometimes devotees, they become devotees and think, now I have to stop relating with my parents because it's a material relationship. But that can be spiritualized also. Of course, it's usually a little slow and difficult. But even if the parents, they relate to us as my darling child, if they have some affection for us and we're practicing Krishna consciousness, they'll get some benefit from that. So Prabhupada gave an example, a Bengali proverb, that when you go fishing, of course devotees don't go fishing, but it's a saying, then you have to catch the fish without getting wet, without getting pulled in yourself. So we have to relate to this material world, we're living in it, but everything should be Krishna-centered. Try to make everything Krishna-centered. Yeah, then another question. Yeah. You have another question continuing that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because in preaching Krishna consciousness, it can also be very advantageous if we develop relationships with wealthy or influential people, like when the devotees were preaching to George Harrison, so much.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between that and materialistic desire to have relationships with someone on the basis of wealth and house?
We may desire to befriend wealthy and influential people because they can be helpful in developing Krishna consciousness. What is the difference between that and simply desiring to have a wealthy friend? It's a question of motive and attitude. If our motive is that I will befriend this person and let him be engaged in Krishna's service, then that is a spiritual activity, because it's the basis is how to serve Krishna. But if we think, let me befriend him and then I'll get some of his money, then that's for my own sense enjoyment, then that's material. It's all a question of attitude and motivation. If the motivation is to please Krishna, and if it's on the basis of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, if it's under we have to know what is pleasing to Krishna. We may think that I will be a butcher for Krishna, but that's not pleasing to Krishna. Krishna says, everything that you eat, you offer to me. And if we think, I like to eat meat, I'll offer that to Krishna. But that won't be pleasing to Krishna, because Krishna is a person, and as a person, he can eat what he likes because he's God, but he chooses that I won't eat meat. So we can offer meat to him and think that I like meat, but Krishna doesn't like that. Often people ask, can we offer this, can we offer that, can we offer mushrooms, can we offer this and that? But so you could say, well, maybe you could, but what is Krishna like? That should be, we should really think what Krishna likes. Instead of thinking, what I like to eat, can I offer it, can I get away with offering it to Krishna, and then I can eat it and enjoy it myself. But really we should think what Krishna likes. That's the best attitude. Especially in worshipping deities, we should think what Krishna likes to eat. Yeah, then.
Yeah, I was wondering, because I've read Srila Prabhupada says there's no real love in the material world, it's only lust. Is there any relationships in the material world that can just actually, like, say a mother has a child, or say you have a parent, you have a sister that's,
are there any relationships in this material world which are not material? Basically, that's what you're asking, which are not based on lust. Well, when we say there's no love in this material world at all, it doesn't mean that that it's necessarily sexual lust. I mean, the word for lust, the word is kam, is there in Sanskrit, kama. So that can be translated as lust or desire. So lust in the sense that is desire for personal enjoyment. Prabhupada said the love of a mother towards her child is the closest to spiritual love, because it's the most selfless. But still, it's not free from the desire for personal enjoyment. One has a child because you may think, well, they'll look after me in my old age. I want to hold a baby in my arms, and how sweet, and we also enjoy that feeling of reciprocation, how the baby is depending on me. So it may not be as gross sexual desire, but it's, unless the desire is there to satisfy Krishna, then it has to be material. There's either personal desire or there's spiritual desire. So again, that relationship, a mother can desire. I was just reading today, actually, Prabhupada said, if you can deliver your children from birth and death and make them Krishna conscious, you can have hundreds of children. Prabhupada used to quote his own Guru Maharaj, who said that if I could... Although I'm a brahmachari all my life, if I could have Krishna, I wouldn't have any objection. If I could make Krishna conscious children, I could have hundreds. And Prabhupada commented, still he didn't. Then another question you're going to ask?
Yeah. In the Purport, Srila Prabhupada says that the pure devotee can see Krishna face to face. Does that mean that you can see Krishna in this room?
In the purport, Prabhupada says that devotee sees Krishna face to face. Does it mean that he can see Krishna in this room? Well, Prabhupada, he was asked that question. Similar question. So one newspaper reporter asked Prabhupada people ask you so many questions, and there are so many things arise in your movement, then how do you know the answer? Prabhupada says, I ask Krishna. And then one of Prabhupada's disciples, Rameshwar Prabhu, was there, and he said, and then the reporter said, well, what does that mean, you ask Krishna? And then Rameshwar explained that, you see, well, Krishna writes the scriptures, and then you refer to the scriptures. And Prabhupada said, no, what are you talking nonsense? I ask Krishna. So yeah, pure devotee has face-to-face relationship with Krishna. Face-to-face. Otherwise, what's the point? I mean, what are we doing this all for? We're chanting Hare Krishna so that eventually we'll go to the spiritual world and we'll just sit on a cloud and string a harp? That's all there is to it? It's too boring. I mean, then people, that's why people, you know, they don't care. They tell them to go to hell, I don't care. It's more fun. If you have to go to heaven and sit on a cloud and have to do that for eternity, it's too boring. Better to go to hell. At least all my friends will be there and we can have a party. People have these ideas. You go to heaven and you sit on a cloud and you play a harp. Because they have no idea actually what is there in the spiritual world. So definitely, Krishna consciousness means seeing Krishna face to face. Prabhupada said, he wrote in one letter that there is no time in my life when I was ever forgetful of Krishna. Another time Prabhupada was asked, he said that, do you see God? And Prabhupada said, well, what is the use if I tell you the reply? Will you believe me? Will you accept? Even if I say yes, will you accept? He said, yeah, I'll accept what you say. So Prabhupada said, yes, I'm seeing Krishna face to face 24 hours a day. So that's it. That's what Krishna consciousness is for developing that. So we can see Krishna. And Prabhupada many times said, if you simply follow this process, you chant 16 rounds, you follow 4 regulative principles, you engage in devotional service, then you will see Krishna face to face in his very life. It's just one small condition. You just have to give up all material desires. Then, any other question? Yeah, you have a question.
You touched this point, I think, in your lecture, but I'm wondering, since a long time, it's this verse in Bhagavad Gita, one who understands the transcendental nature of my birth and activities, I cannot figure out what this means, understand. It doesn't mean, I can't imagine, it doesn't mean that I understand it in the lecture.
What does it mean when Krishna says, one who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities never has to take birth again, but he comes to me? What is the meaning? No, is it simply an intellectual understanding? No. Because it is not possible to understand Krishna simply by an academic method. The materialistic demeanor cannot possibly stretch to the transcendental autocrat. If you can translate that, it's not so easy. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is writing. Is not so easy to understand. But Krishna says, Bhaktya mam abhijanati. I can be understood through bhakti. So understanding means that we hear from scriptures, we hear from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra how, as Krishna himself explains in that section of Bhagavad Gita, it's a very interesting section. Ajopi sanavyayatma bhutanam ishvaropi sanpraktum swamatishtaya sambhavami atmamaya. Krishna says, I am unborn and my transcendental form never deteriorates. Nevertheless, I appear within this material world in my original transcendental form by my own energy. So we hear and we understand, but the beginning of understanding, as Prabhupada once said, is standing under, submissive attitude. So first of all, we have to understand that we can't understand God simply by an academic approach, but that we can understand Him by His mercy, which He gives to us if we humbly accept that I am totally inferior to Him and totally dependent upon Him. Then we can understand. But it's important that Krishna says, one who understands my appearance and activities, because this again stresses the point that he is a person. To understand means to accept that he is a person who has activities. So if it's just a theoretical understanding, God is great, then we can't understand Krishna. Simply to say he's great, but then what does he do? What does he look like? What are his names? How can we live with him? What is he like to eat? This is an when janma karma, understanding his activities. That means to understand in detail how he is a person. That's the broader meaning. It's not simply that we sit for a bhakti shastra exam, and then you get then you pass your bhakti shastra exam, then you can get Brahman initiated. I think that's the rule. So you can have a bhakti shastra exam. That doesn't mean you have bhakti. So we should understand. Definitely these things are to be studied and understood, but in a mode of devotion. That's the all important thing. That's the all important factor. Then.
How does he ask him?
Well, he speaks to Krishna and Krishna speaks back to him. That's it. You can't understand because you don't accept that Krishna is a person. You think that Krishna is so far away, but he's right here also. It's difficult for us to understand because we're materially conditioned. But actually Krishna is with us. And if we become pure, then we can see him and talk to him. That's the wonderful thing about Krishna consciousness. We're not just worshipping a God who's so great, he's so far away and so vast. But if we develop our love for God, then Krishna will sit on our lap and we'll feed him. Inconceivable.
Another question. You quoted this verse that we can offer a flower and fruits to Krishna. So my question is, do we have to possess the flower that we offer to Krishna?
Do we have to possess the flower? Could we
go into the supermarket
and steal it?
And offer everything.
Sometimes devotees do that. They walk into the supermarket and offer everything to Krishna. Well, I don't know what they do with the meat. Well, there is a method to offer things to Krishna also. It's called the Archan Vidhi. There are rules and regulations for offering. So, first of all, generally one should procure items for offering. Just like you said, a householder, he should get the offerings by working and either earning or just producing the foods himself. Or a brahmana, people may bring him some fruits and flowers and then he offers them to Krishna. Or a temple, in an established temple, people will bring them. Generally they should be in one's possession. Mm. And then they're offered. In one's possession means one understands actually nothing is mine, but then one formally offers them to Krishna. So you can offer the whole world to Krishna, but then it's not really ours to offer, is it? And that would also deprive others' ability of if we think that now I've offered everything to Krishna, then that's depriving others of the possibility of offering also. So that is not according to the proper rules and regulations. There are rules and regulations how to offer also. So it's a nice thought that the devotees will offer everything in the supermarket and then everyone will get prasadam. But it's not the proper system I'm doing. And actually you should inspect first, and you don't offer the offer. You shouldn't offer rotten fruit. And so like this.
Unwashed.
Unwashed also. Yeah.
There was a poor brahmana and he just couldn't collect any alms for the Krishna. And he had a neighbor who had a very beautiful flower garden, flower tree. So he met him and he said, "Lord, I'm so poor, I can't offer you anything but I possess a fleece except that flower which is on the tree." And then later on that man offered the same flower to Radha Durga. She became so excited. The Krishna received the Krishna.
Where's this story from? I don't know either.
It was coming from Vyasa.
Well, it may not be coming from Vyas.
I just thought maybe you heard.
No, I never heard that one. It may be, but I'm not aware of it. Generally, you see, as Prabhupada notes in one of the purports here in Bhagavad Gita, that in India, even a poor man can afford some flowers. You can go and pick some from here and there. And even, you see, if someone has a big flower tree, then if someone, the neighbor is there, they'll generally allow you to pick three or four flowers for puja purpose. They won't deny it if you have so many flowers on the tree. So, doesn't sound like a very authentic story. Although maybe the mood is nice that Durga later got it and she became ecstatic. I don't believe everything I hear, everyone says, even if they're supposed to be an authorized devotee, because we have to understand according to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. And even someone's a guru, they have to speak according to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra also. So I have a little antenna here which catches all the... It only takes things on a certain frequency. That frequency is Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. And other things, we may say that it's doubtful unless authenticated. Just like I was reading this morning, that anyway, I won't discuss it this morning. Someone is trying to say that homosexuality is accepted and that homosexuals are considered auspicious in Vedic culture. So this is coming from one of the gurus in our movement, but I don't accept it because I read in Prabhupada's books that it's considered demoniac. So maybe a guru, but he's not speaking according to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. So I wrote him a letter and say, can you provide some Guru, Sadhu and Shastra about this? Let's see how he replies. We should be very careful. There's so many people say so many things, but we have to see what is the Shastric basis. Ya Shastra vidim utsrija vartate kama karataha nasa siddham avapnoti nasukam na param gatim. Those who don't follow Shastra and speculate and invent their own ways of behaving, they cannot achieve perfection, nor happiness, nor the supreme destination. So we should be a little careful about hearing. I tell you, someone told me they heard a story from an ISKCON guru, and I know where the story was coming from. It's coming from a so-called spiritual comic book produced in India. A lot of the people, they read these comic books and they, oh, I've got some new story to tell, but... We should be very careful.